Robin. Welcome to East Lake. We say this is a church for everyone. And today we're going to talk about pressure. How do we handle pressure? Because when I or someone I love buckles under the pressure of work, it's not laughing. It's not funny. Or when my schedule gets so out of control, you know, that it just keeps going. The laundry piles up, and the groceries is not done. I'm late everywhere I go, and that's not any fun. That's just lots of pressure. Where there's tons of bills and not enough money, that's pressure. That's no fun. And the problem is the pressure stays inside me. So everywhere I go, it shows up. The pressure shows up everywhere I go. The pressure shows up in everything that I do. Here's an example. I've got a buddy that's doing a research project on road rage. And here's what they're finding out about road rage is that the ragers aren't really mad about what happened with the traffic accident or the incident. That's not what got them upset. What they're finding out as they interview them is they bring the rage with them as they're driving. And when they have this accident or this, it just sort of releases this rage, this pressure that's already there. Because here's the thing about pressure. It's inside me. And everywhere I go and everything that I do, the pressure shows up. Now here's the amazing thing. Jesus has a lot to say about pressure. Had all kinds of things to say about pressure. It's the big idea this weekend, right in your note, there's a connection between pressure and faith. So Jesus has lots to say about how to handle the pressure. And, you know, he was a person that was in a regular family, and he hung around with normal people. You know, Jesus did not come from a privileged background. He was a carpenter. He knew what it was to get behind in a project or have a project go south. He knew what it was to have, you know, people not make commitments or not pay their bills. I mean, Jesus understood what it was like to be involved in pressure. He comes from a family. His father must have passed away when he was young, so he's with a single mom. And there's lots of pressure with his brothers and sisters. If you're the oldest child in a family, you know pressure. Jesus was the oldest child. So he saw his mom under pressure, and he saw his brothers and his sisters and his friends. And at one point, he speaks into the whole thing. And let me read it to you. It's in the notes here. So don't worry about these things, saying, what will we eat? What will we drink? What will we wear? These things dominate the thoughts of unbelievers. But your heavenly Father already knows all your needs. Seek the kingdom of God above all else and live righteously, and he'll give you everything you need. So don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring its own worries. Today's trouble is enough for today. That's some wise words. And he pinpoints the whole thing. He says, here's what's behind all the pressure. I'm worrying too much. I'm worrying about getting all the things that I want. I'm worrying about not losing what I have. I'm worrying, am I going to be able to keep up with this pace in life? It's worry that drives the pressure. And so I construct a life that's too hard to keep up with. Here's a question, just jot it in your notes. Have you built a life that's too difficult to live? It's too difficult to live and I built it because I'm worrying. Am I going to lose what I have? Am I going to be able to get what I want? And Jesus pinpoints, this is not the circumstances in life, it's how I worry about them. That's what causes all the pressure in life. And today we're going to talk about margin. There's a place in your notes. Margin is the space between your load and your limits, and the less space I have, the more pressure I feel. Everything has limits. I have limits in my life, and the margin is that space between what I'm carrying and the limit to what I can carry. And if I get really close to my limits or I exceed my limits with all the worry, then there's lots and lots of pressure. The more space I have, the less pressure I have. But when I don't have much space between my load and my limits, when there's no margin there, lots of worry, I feel lots of pressure. And pressure causes things. Here's just some ideas. My stress gets higher. In the medical field now, they're finding out that a lot of the physical things that we go through are stress-related. and my immune system breaks down, and I feel sick all the time. And, you know, it's not just emotional, they're finding out, that we're holistic. And when you're stressing yourself all the time, it's like if you were to go out in your car today and just put the emergency brake on and put it in neutral and just floor it and keep it there for like 3 hours. Your engine would get stressed. And like on the inside, we get stressed and we start breaking down physically, and stressed people are grouchy and they're no fun to be around. And when you're under lots of pressure, your stress is higher. The next one is I get a very narrow focus. And here's what this means. All I can see is my problems. Because when you don't have much space between your load and your limits, you know you're only one problem away from the tipping point. I'm one problem away from disaster. So I have to constantly be looking out, making sure that a problem doesn't come up I can't handle, or I have to solve all the problems. And pretty soon, here's what it seems like. Pretty soon, it just seems like I'm just chasing one problem after another. And here is the problem with that. No one's life is just about problems. You miss so much. No one's life is just problems. But when you get a very narrow focus because you're under pressure, it can seem like that. It can seem like all I do is solve problems and make sure problems don't happen. And pretty soon you miss so much life because your focus is just problems, 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 problems. And that's what it does to have lots of pressure. And my relationships get rocky. Here's why. Every little thing becomes a ginormous thing. If you're married or you got a girlfriend, boyfriend, how many times have you been in a knockdown, drag-out argument, and then you can't even really remember what caused it? It's something very small. Like, you know, you didn't take out the trash, or, you know, how come you spent $6 instead of $3 for lunch? It's just very small little silly things, but they turn into ginormous things because of all the pressure. When I was a kid, we used to play this game in the swimming pool. We'd get these beach balls. You've seen them, the big colored ones, the big ginormous ones. And we'd all get a beach ball, and we'd all force it underneath the water. And you try to keep it there as long as you could, and the one that could keep the ball underneath the water the longest won. And so you'd push that ball underneath there, and you'd be squirming around, and sure enough, every single time, it would get away from you. And when that beach ball came out of the water, it just didn't slowly come to the top. I mean, it got out of there, so boom, shot way up there. Pressure. And it happens in our relationships. Small little things just fly off. People fly off the handle. And so you know, they get really, really super rocky. And you try to unwind the story, and it doesn't work because it's not even about the story. You spend 5 days talking about the beach ball. Well, it's not even about that. It's about the pressure that I'm under. My relationships get rocky. And then the last thing, these are just some ideas. I'm unprepared for the future. And here's why. When all I can hear is the voice of worry, it cancels out God's voice. I can't catch those divine nudges that I need so much in life for God to guide me. So He knows about the future that's coming my direction. He doesn't want me to get caught off guard and get bushwhacked and get hit from left field. So He's always nudging me where to go and how to be. But when I get really, really super worried, I had a bout with worry the last week or so, and all of a sudden I got very unclear on the nudges. You know, just not to make this all mystical, but it's just those little nudges you get on the inside, and you're like, I know that's God telling me to do this. And I got confused about it. I didn't know if it was right or wrong, and I wasn't certain what to do. And I ended up making some mistakes. I wasn't prepared for the future because I wasn't clear on what God was saying. I couldn't follow the nudge. And really what it was is it wasn't that He had stopped leading me, is that I couldn't hear Him because all I could hear was the voice of fear and worry. It closed my ears to God. You know, you always think about what you're listening to, and all I could think about was the worries and what I was afraid of. And I missed some things. I missed those divine nudges that we desperately need. God doesn't expect you to figure it all out. He'll lead you, guide you, give you nudges, When you get worried, you just can't track with him. You can't get a beat on God. So the future comes at you and you're unprepared. You don't know what to do. Now, margin solves that. So let's just, some practical stuff, take some notes. Number one, make a plan. You know, God has plans. And you'd think if anybody didn't need a plan, I mean, could kind of handle life without a plan, it would be the Lord. What does he need a plan for? It's just like, but even he has a plan. And look, in your notes, it says what his plan is. I know the plans I have for you, you and me, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. God has a plan. And a part of dealing with life is to make a plan. Now, I know when you tell a room full of people, you say, well, you know, here's the big secret to make life work. You know, do some work and make a plan. And everybody's like, back up, boy. Because that's a lot of work. It's hard to make a plan. And I think I know, at least for me, I know why I don't like to make a plan. Because I'm already exhausted from keeping up from everything else. Don't give me more to do, even one thing to do, because I'm already tired from everything I'm doing. And you're going to send me home with an assignment to make a plan? And I know it feels that way. It kind of a word picture for it. Let me show you kind of what it looks like. It's like boxes. You know, you go through life and you have boxes. You have your family box. We all know this creates all kinds of neat things and cool things and everything else. But there's worries that come with it, and there's pressures that come with family. All of a sudden, you know, I'm in my family box, and I have a lot to do here. There's work to do here along with everything else, and there's pressures and worries. And then you know, you have this box, the bills box. And aren't they faithful to come every month? I don't know why they never said, no, we'll give them a month off. They never do. Every month, here come the bills, pressure. Pressure, just lots of pressure. What about, I don't know, you ever get this one? We had a catalytic converter, a transmission, and a transfer case out in our family this last month. So if you ever needed to say that sucks, say it today at church. That sucks. There's a lot of pressure and worry, and how are we going to fix it, and what's going on? Cars stink. The ones in heaven are never going to break. But these ones do down here. You got to have new ones and bigger ones, and just cars are, you know, ridiculous. And how about this word right here, the savings box? Now I know, I know. Well, here, okay, let me tell you something about the savings box. I know some of you are like this. You have a certain number that you have to have in savings, and if it dips down like 3 cents below that number, you're worried and scared and pressured. Because you have a certain amount of savings that makes you feel like that's what I got to have, and it has to always be there. And if it's not there, you know, savings can cause lots of it. And then, you know, there's this one, the job, my J-O-B, people I work with and the goals and things I have to hit, and my boss and changes and everything that goes on. Who took my doggone stapler? You know, it's just like the job, lots of worries and pressures there. And so I come to you and I say, and let's make a plan. Let's put some effort out and make a plan. I need you to do some work and make a plan. And you're going, you suck. I'm not doing any work. That's too difficult. Here's why. Because when you're doing all of this, you're dealing with all these boxes like this, let me show you the box that I really want. It's the nothing box. No labels. No obligations. Nobody needs anything from me. I don't have to do anything for anybody. I do everything I can to crawl up in here once in a while. This is where I want to be. And I don't get it that often because I have a lot going on in my life. It's complex. And when I get a chance, the little bit of free time that I have, can't I just zone out in front of the video thing and just like not listen or take a shower for 2 days. Nothing. No obligations. And it's like that. And the problem is we just sort of crawl in and out of our nothing box, and of course that box gets smaller and smaller and all the other ones get bigger and bigger. And you know what? This is the crazy thing. It's almost like it becomes the best part of my life is when I get to be in my nothing box. And that's not life. You gotta have a plan. If you make it, and plans can be very simple, by the way. But if you have a plan, You'll get something more than going through all these boxes and then going into your nothing box and then being drugged back out and going through all the stuff. You have something more than that. See, a plan is something that causes us to organize our life and balance our life and move through our life. That's why God has a plan for you, so you won't get confused and think that he's going to harm you. Because sometimes in life, things get so bad, you think, God's harming me. He's hurting me. He has to teach me. I've been bad. He's punishing me. So he put a plan together so we would always know, I have a plan, and it's not to harm you. It's not to harm you. It's to bless you. Now, here's some ideas on planning, just notes to think about. Here's the first one. What if every day, just one simple thing, what if every day we just started and just said this very simple prayer? When I go to work, the last thing I do, I'm in my car, my 4Runner, and I turn it off, and I sit there, and I say like a 10-second prayer. I do this every day at work. I get into work, I say, God, here we go again, into the pit, and I just say this prayer. I say, God, just let me today be a light for you and show me your plan. Or even if you just wanted to make it simple, what if every single day, just start this way, a simple prayer. God, show me your plan today. This is a 4 or 5 second prayer every day. How would that change things? God, show me your plan today that is not to harm me, but is intended to bless me. I want to work your plan, God. And then here's the second thing. When you make a plan, one of the reasons we don't make a plan is because we start to sit down and make a plan, and before you know it, we have like 97 things that need to be planned out. And we're like, that is way too much. I'm going to get some ice cream and take a nap. And it's like, no, you know, it's like, do this. Pick one thing that matters to you and make a plan. Oh, I know there's a gazillion that you should do, and me too, but don't go there. Start here. Build a small little muscle. Pick one thing that matters to you. Does it matter how big or small it is? All that matters is that it matters to you. Make a plan and ask yourself these two questions. Where do I want to go? How am I going to get there? Two simple questions. Where do I want to go? How do I want to get there? The first thing is start every day with a simple prayer. God, show me your plan today. The second thing, pick one thing. Doesn't matter how big or small. And make a plan. Two questions. Where do I want to go? How do I want to get there? Because God doesn't want us to just crawl in and out of the nothing box all the time. And pretty soon, that's the best part of our life. That is not his plan for you. Because his plan for you is to give you a hope and a future. And that doesn't live in the nothing box. There's a lot more for us than that. Not to harm us. To give us a hope and a future. So make a plan. Number two, keep it simple. And I don't know, you've probably seen this. Life does not just get more and more simple. I mean, it'd be nice if it did, but just life gets more and more complex. Kids and bills and things that we have to go through. Even the things in life that you think, now this I can handle. This is going to be something I can do. This is simple enough for me. Even those things seem to get complex. And so, you know, check out this video.
Sunday afternoon in the cookhouse, I thought we'd check in with Max Cook and see what he's up to. What are you up to, Max?
This manual is got a hand. So do I have to point at the hole on the beam?
Can you just make sure you don't put it together backwards like you did with the last one?
Well, you know, if we could buy real furniture, God forbid, just once.
We have.
Instead of furniture you have to assemble. Darling, dear, light of my life.
I'm so confused. What does this ghost-like fabric have to do with anything? This is a nightmare. I'm already missing. I need another one of these, and it's nowhere to be found.
I am the biggest idiot of all time. I have been spending 90 minutes looking for two of these. It only comes with one, according to the thing. It's this that goes into here. This stands on its own and comes out later, somewhere down the road. Wait. Ha ha! Look who wins now. Johnny wins. I think I got it.
Honey? We have a bit of a problem. These two should be flipped because you don't want the one that's not painted black to be in the front.
I'm seriously going to have a nervous breakdown right now.
Has your boss ever said, oh, this will be really easy and simple? Your wife said, I just need a minute. Your kid runs up and says, Mommy, Mommy, just I need a second. And then just, you know, it turns out, you know, I'm seriously going to have a nervous breakdown. Because life gets more complex. And we tend to make things very complex that could stay simple. You know, religion can make it really complex to follow God, follow Jesus, and all kinds of things. And he meant for it to be very, very simple, just to keep it simple. And I don't know if you know, way back in the day, Israel, all the Jewish people, were slaves in Egypt. It's a true story. It's a world history. It's a fact. They were all slaves there. And at some point, God chooses this guy, Moses. That's why he's famous. He comes in, and he's sort of like he's their deliverer. And God delivers all these Israelites, these Jewish people, out of Egypt. Can you imagine? I mean, it was a huge thing that happened. All the slaves just were walking out, you know, and God made it happen. It's the movie, Ten Commandments. You've probably seen it. And so they all leave. And as they're leaving, as they're moving out, now they're realizing God did all this. They're trying to figure out this one thing. How do I keep God happy? I mean, how do I make sure God's happy with me? And the religion starts to creep in. And they start to get all confused on how to keep God happy. And the Lord sees it all. He says, oh, man, I want them to understand, having a relationship with me, the key to the whole thing is keep it simple. Listen to what he tells them. Look in your notes. I want to read this. He says, the altars you make must be simple altars of earth. I mean, can you imagine that? Think of all the grandiose religious buildings all over the world. When the Israelites were trying to figure out, how do I walk with God? He said, hey, I'm a pretty simple, just use some dirt. Just get something that everybody can get their hands on. Just keep it simple. You can use some dirt. And he says, build altars only where I tell you to, and I will come and bless you there. Circle that. Bless you there. Do you know there's a lot of people that are running around that feel like they've done something in their life to lose God's blessing? They have something in their past, and they've done something in their life, and they're very confused on how to get it back. And God says, keep it simple. And they're confused, like, what do I have to do, and how can I ever get God to bless me again? Am I good enough? Of course, here's the problem with that. How good is good enough? Can I tell you something? God doesn't bless me and you because we're good enough. Because none of us will ever be good enough. On your best day, on my best day, we're not good enough. Let me tell you a little secret. Everyone's poop stinks. Everyone's. You think of the best person you've ever met, the nicest person, the kindest person, the goodest person you have ever met. If you get down in that toilet and take a sniff, you're going to go, yeah, it stinks. Because everyone's poop stinks. God does not bless you because you're good. God blesses you because he loves you. It's not something that you earn with him. And the Jewish people, they're starting to get off track. What do I have to do to make God happy? What do I have to do to make God want to bless me? And he's given them this strong word picture. He says, listen, I'm really okay with some dirt. Have any dirt in your life? It needs to be cleaned up. God says, I'm really okay with some dirt. That's where I'm setting the bar. I'm setting the bar at the dirt level. I'll bless dirt if you include me, if you'll let me be a part of your life. God can do a lot with dirt, by the way. He doesn't bless you or me because we're good. He blesses us because he loves us. And that can get confusing. Look at how one writer says it. This is all that I have learned. God made us plain and simple, but we have made ourselves very complicated. Boy, isn't it the truth? God says, just keep it simple. Maybe sometime it would be good just get all confused, just walk outside somewhere and just grab a handful of dirt and hold it in your hand and just say, this dirt and me, we're good enough for God. He blesses us because he loves us. Just keep it very, very simple. Now the next thing is find rest and rhythm. It's the last thing we'll talk about. Find rest and rhythm. I've got a friend that likes NASCAR. He'll spend an entire afternoon watching NASCAR. I know some people think NASCAR is a sport. I don't see how. I mean, how can something be a sport that you just go straight and turn left, go straight and turn left, go straight and turn left? And I guess that's what they like to watch. But anyways, he likes NASCAR. Now, here's the thing about NASCAR that I didn't understand. There's a huge strategy in NASCAR. Like, you drive, and then you come in, and you take a pit stop. And, one of the keys to the whole thing is when you're actually resting. It isn't just the driving part of it, and this is life, too. One of the keys is resting. Because if those NASCAR guys don't come in and take a rest, get a drink of water, take their hands off the steering wheel, get some new tires, and fuel up, they won't stay in the race. And if you don't stay in the race, you can't win the race. Famous old movie, this is kind of like throwback week, Ben-Hur, you ever heard of that? And we had I Love Lucy, and so, you know, I'm old, I know that stuff. But anyways, Ben-Hur, Charlton Heston, also famous for the very first movie, Planet of the Apes, and Charlton Heston, he's in this movie called Ben-Hur, and in the movie there's a famous chariot scene, so go home and YouTube it. And in this chariot scene, it's like live. And Charlton Heston, you know, Charlie Heston, he's in the chariot scene. He's getting thrown all around, you know. And he's got this famous director, Cecil B. DeMille. And in this chariot scene, he's going. And then when the practice is over, he comes over to the famous director. He says, listen, he goes, I'm having a hard enough time staying in the chariot, let alone winning the race. And the director puts his hand in and says, Chuck. He goes, your job is just to stay in the race. It's my job to make sure you win it. And wouldn't it be nice that the very next time that you really, like, the worry is just there and there's all kinds of pressure? What if you said this to yourself? It's not my job to win the race. My job is just stay in the race. The results, that's God's job. That's his job. He takes care of that. You have to find a way in life to understand what's my job. What's God's job? It's not my job to win. It's God's job. And there's this idea of having a rhythm in life. And let's read it in the Bible. This is Jesus talking. He says, come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Circle that. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. A number of years ago, my wife and I went to a Christmas concert. I was really looking forward to it because it was going to be at a black gospel church, and I never had been to a concert there, but I just knew it was going to be great. It was going to be a choir, and sure enough, we get there, which I thought was early. By the time we get there, the building's already packed out. I mean, everybody's already standing, and music is going up front. We're like 20 minutes early, you know, and there's just electricity in this room, you know, and it's amazing, and everybody's already singing and cheering. And then the choir comes in, and they were so majestic. They had these beautiful robes in, and they come in singing, and they got like this perfect walk as they come in, and they go down the aisle, and they get up front, and the whole choir, and then all of a sudden, the place just erupts into clapping. The whole place just clapping like this. And I mean, the entire place, you know, and I got swept up into it, and I'm clapping like this too. And I'm looking around, and the choir starts singing, and everybody's clapping, and they go all the way through the first song, and everybody's just clapping, just like this. And I'm like, wow, I'm in it, man. I'm doing it, you know? And then the next next song starts, and same thing, nobody stops. Now we're just even clapping a little faster. And I'm clapping with them and smiling, and people are looking at me. And then the third song starts, and I'm like, we're still clapping. I'm gonna take a little break. Whoo, look at him in here, man. There it is, all going and everything. And I just said, wow. And they're clapping, and I got a little break. I thought, all right, I'm gonna get back in. And I'm sort of like, and the beat kept getting, I had never felt so white in all my life. I couldn't catch the beat. I couldn't get back in. My wife has got plenty of color. She sees me over like a spaz going like this. She goes, what are you doing? And I said, I just stopped for a minute and I can't get back in. You know, I feel like that's my life sometimes. I better not stop. Because if I do, I'll never get back in. I have to keep up, man. I have to make it happen. I have to keep pushing. Because if I stop, I'm not going to get back in. And then I'm going to look like the weird one. And I'm going to look like the one that can't handle it. And I'm just going to keep clapping. And you know, sometimes me and you, we will clap ourselves to death before we'll stop and find a rhythm that we can sustain. It's a rhythm of grace. It begins with grace. It's a gift. It begins with understanding this, that God wants to teach me to live a life that I can sustain, that's been developed for who I am. Not the Joneses next door. Not my brother and sister that have all that. Not what my dad told me. Not what I learned in church. Not what my mom drilled into my head. My life that God has created for me with his plan. It's designed for my pace. It's a rhythm of grace that I can live and sustain. And that changes everything. Especially in relationships. It's the last thing. It's the bottom line. When we sustain peace, our relationships are better. You know, people don't fall out of love. They get pressured out of love. People don't choose to argue about the same silly things all the time. They're under so much pressure. Relationships break down because of pressure. Pressure, 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 pressure. But when we have peace, space, margin, when we have a life that is built based on who God created us to be, and we can sustain the peace, our relationships are so much different. You know, there's some research in our churches at Eastlake, so a few churches all over the area, and it was astounding stuff I heard this last week as I was meeting with some of the guys, the leaders. They said that we have discovered now that if someone comes to one of the Eastlake churches, initially they just love it, they like it, you know, then, but they just think it's great, you know, they just, I like this church. But you know that if they don't form a relationship or a connection within 2 months, they're gone. And I was like, what? Where is this data coming from? Because it used to be 6 months. Not anymore. 6 weeks sometimes. And these are the people that like it. They're there so they can discover something about Jesus. They want something with the Lord. But if they don't form a relationship, a connection, they're gone. Here's why. Because relationships are the glue that hold us in. And we're under so much pressure, 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 pressure. We might have one person in our life, but we don't have the network to hold us together. And Jesus is a team sport. You do it with others. You got to catch in. And when you have peace, you have the margin for that to occur.